Hello, and welcome to Living Vertical Radio, where we change the narrative of media by introducing you to creative and innovative individuals that inspire you with their unique stories. Our host is C. Steen Duckworth, and you can call in or Skype into this program by calling 1-646-668-2928 #1. Please make sure your surrounding area is quiet because this is a live program. One Sure Sign Mobile Notary of Frisco, Texas provides professional notary service across the Dallas metro area. Our notary professionals are ready to help you with loan closings, power of attorney, fingerprinting, and other notary services. We meet you at your location of choice, your home, office, hospital, or local coffee shop, convenient to your schedule. Reliable, professional, and affordable. One Sure Sign is happy to support Living Vertical Radio here in Texas. Mention you heard this ad on Living Vertical for $5 off any notary service. Interested in advertising on our podcast with a listening audience of over 800,000? You can do a 15-second business ad, a 30-second radio ad, or a 10-minute interview radio ad. Our prices start out at $50. Contact us at info@verticalmediagroup.com. Our pricing is made to give everyone the ability to advertise no matter the budget. Thank you. And here's your host, C. Steen Duckworth.
Hello. So today, acclaimed as one of the most influential and inspirational women of African origin, we have Dr. Justina Mutale. She has been the African Woman of the Year, a 2012 honor bestowed upon Justina on the same platform as Archbishop Desmond Tutu of South Africa. She is the founder and president of the Justina Mutale Foundation and its scholarship program for the underprivileged African young women. She is also the founder of Positive Runway, the global catwalk to stop the spread of HIV and AIDS. Named as one of the most respected names and well-known faces and influential voices, Justina is listed in many of Who's Who's list, power list, and influential list, including the 100 most influential creatives. She serves on the board of World Leaders Forum and is global ambassador and spokesperson of the International Women's Think Tank. Justina has also been featured in the as hero in the Capital Finance International Journal, which brings coverage and analysis of the drivers behind change. Today, Dr. Justina Mutale is a guest. She has written a book called The Art of Iconic Leadership, Power Secrets of Female World Leaders. And this book is intellectually celebrates the emerging power of female world leaders on the global political landscape. She chronicles remarkable achievements of a few brilliant women leaders who have employed mostly soft leadership skills to unleash remarkable transformational in their own lives and those of others, using the instrumentality of sheer industry, uncommon courage, passion, and spirit. So today, I want to introduce everybody to Dr. Justina Mutale, and she has written a book called The Art of Iconic Leadership, The Power Secrets of Female World Leaders. And this is a great book. It's so rich. I can't even interview Dr. Mutale on the whole book, but I did pick out some really great points that I'm interested in, and I'm sure my listeners are interested in. And so I'm just going to tell you, give you a little some bullet points, so because I want you to really go get this book. Some of the bullet points talks about the power of vision, creativity, competence, emotional intelligence, versatility, resilience, compassion, charisma, purpose and focus, and much, much more. This is a great book for any woman that's interested. And also looking at some of the examples that she used, at some of the women that she used, but also to talk about even just looking at yourself as a leader. So Justina, thank you for being with us. I'm happy to have you. I want, you know, everyone, I've been knowing Justina for a while now, and I'm always encouraged by, I'm a Facebook friend. I'm always encouraged by what she's doing. I'm always looking at her as a person to give other people information, especially women leaders that I, leadership that I know. And so I am so excited about her new book. This book is well written, Justina. It's a great read, and it's a read that you're not going to want to stop. You want to go and you want to keep reading this book. It's very good. And I listen, I read a lot of books myself from different leaders, and this is, I could say, is really a great one. So, Justina, tell me, what made you want to write this book?
Thank you, Celeste. I should first of all start by thanking you for inviting me to your radio station and giving me an audience with you, your viewers and listeners. What made me write this book? I am a gender activist. I've been in the gender movement for quite a long time. For about 20 years, I worked in the gender section of the, I worked in the Commonwealth Secretariat in London, and my final 10 years were spent in the gender section. So that meant advocating for gender equality and the empowerment of women. And when I left there, I also continued to advocate for gender equality and the empowerment of women, which led me to founding my own organization called the Justina Motale Foundation. So what made me write this book is that on my journey, first of all, I come from Africa, from Zambia, and I could say that I come from a background of very powerful, strong, assertive women, women that have always defied the gender dynamics. On my mother's side, a woman rules the kingdom, as you have read in the book. And of course, on my father's side, even if it's patriarchal, but that did not stop one very assertive woman to get up and start a movement, lead a movement. We are talking about women leading. So she led a movement and gathered such a massive following that it shook the political foundation of my country. So I always grew up knowing that women are natural born leaders, that women are the backbone of society. And of course, I am a mother, and I've been a child. I've seen how mothers work hard to put to bring up children. So women as mothers, we nurture humanity. Mm-hmm. Both the boy child and the girl child. It just sort of got me confused when I coming into the world and finding that women's leadership is not considered or not accepted in the public arena, and therefore women were lagging behind in their leadership roles or leadership positions. Mm-hmm. in the public arena. Mm-hmm. So what made me write this book is also that in moving about in these feminist movements and gender activist movements, and I kept hearing people saying that there are not enough role models. Mm-hmm. For the girl child to aspire to be a leader. Mm-hmm. Then I'm thinking, but I grew up with all these powerful women around me. As far as I know, women are natural born leaders. Women are great leaders, because that's what I grew up with. And also not just in my family, as I was growing up, going to school and listening to the radio, reading the newspaper, I got to learn about other powerful women leaders that I have, for example, featured in my book. Women like Cleopatra the VII and also Catherine the Great. Those go back way back in history. And as I was already grown up, there were women like Margaret Thatcher, women like Indira Gandhi and all of that. I know, for example, that although the USA have only just now had their first ever woman vice president, the rest of the world have been having women presidents for a long time. In fact, the first ever, the world's first ever female president and prime minister, she served in both roles, is from Sri Lanka. Uh-huh. Which is in Asia.
It's interesting that I find that, and because I've been always attracted to world leaders and women in the world, basically because I'm a huge reader, okay? And I come from a family like yours, so I found it really interesting that there was so much going on with women in other countries than in the U.S. And so now, I mean, so we celebrate every, like we're celebrating, like you said, Harris as vice president, but it's like, wow, there's been like so many other leaders.
Yes. In fact, in my book, Kamala Harris is in the epilogue, in the closing of the book,
okay,
because she's only just now stepped onto the scene.
Okay.
Of course, which is remarkable. Of course, she's made history as the first ever female vice president of the United States of America. So that is quite iconic.
Right.
But then we have had all these women in so many parts of the world, including the Muslim world, which
yes,
is considered to be very stiff when it comes to gender and gender dynamics. But they've already had a woman called Benazir Bhutto. She
uh-huh.
was the prime minister of Pakistan.
Right.
And they, even in Africa, we've already had about three or four women presidents. We've had a few women prime ministers and, of course, vice presidents as well.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, like they say, you know, Sri Lanka had the first ever a woman president and a woman prime minister. They say the sun rises from the east and sets in the west.
Okay.
So only now the U.S. is trying to catch up with the rest of the world when it comes to having women at the very highest level of decision making, which is the political office, the highest political office.
Okay.
So I needed to tell this story
mm-hmm.
to let the young women know that it is possible for them to lead.
Okay.
Because other women before us have done it.
Mm-hmm.
Women like Cleopatra the Seventh, as I said, women like Catherine the Great, and coming on to women like Indira Gandhi of India and Margaret Thatcher.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we look at Jacinta Ardern in New Zealand and Sanna Marin, in fact, who is so far the youngest ever,
mm-hmm.
The youngest ever head of state or head of government in the whole wide world.
Wow.
She's from Finland.
Uh-huh.
So I needed to tell this story so that young women and girls would know that it is possible for them to lead, that there's been coined about shattering the glass ceiling. This has been shattered in loads and loads of other parts
Absolutely,
of the world, except
right.
the USA.
Right,
yeah.
right. So why do you think women leaders have an advantage over men leaders? When it comes to, because we've seen lately, especially with the pandemic, we've seen countries where women are the leaders that have done exceptionally well with their people and their countries. But what are the other advantages that we have over men?
As I said before, as mothers, as the women, it's inbuilt within us. We have an inbuilt generosity of spirit.
Mm-hmm.
We also have the highest level of emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, emotional intelligence has been tapped into, and it's also been praised as the new science of relationships.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
Yeah. So because women always attach they're tuned into the emotions of those people around them. And I think it's that motherly spirit. When you have children with you, you need to know what is going on. Even when a baby cannot speak, you know there's a problem with the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And for some, miraculously, you know what the baby, what you need to do to make the baby feel better.
Right.
So we carry that with us into the political arena and also into the public arena. And I think this is what women have done, women world leaders have done even during the pandemic. They have brought with them all those, the motherly love, the survival instinct that they have. They have the motherly love, the survival instincts, the high emotional intelligence, and the wisdom, the natural wisdom that women have. This is what all those top women leaders who have been leading in trying to deal with the COVID-19 or the pandemic in their countries. That is why we have seen that those countries that are led by women have fared better than those countries that are led by men, because these women leaders have brought to the public the love, the wisdom, the intuition, the natural survival instinct that they use, for example, to look after a sick child in their family or any other sick member of the family, whether it's your mother or grandmother, whoever is depending on you. So that is what they have brought with them naturally and reacted in the way that they have reacted.
So
and
I know
to contain the virus.
Okay, so I heard that, and it's funny, now I'm asking you this, and I thought about, well, you know, for women in all over the world, they've been doing things. But a lot of people here in the United States, they believe that 2021 is really going to be a shift in women leadership and women power. And I think it's more in the U.S. than anywhere else, because as you said before, women have already been doing some things in other countries. They're leaders, more so than in the U.S. And maybe in the U.S. they're saying that because they're starting to believe that we need to have more women leaders in politics and in our national government. What do you say about, what do you think about that?
You know, they do say that when America sneezes, the rest of the world catches a cold. Even though we see, that is why this story about not having enough role models or the other parts of the world thinking that the glass ceiling hasn't been broken is because it hasn't been broken in the USA. Oh. I was quite heartbroken or disappointed, so to speak, when Hillary did not become president of the US, because had she become president of the US then, automatically it would have sent this message to the world, to other parts of the world. Remember, there are still other parts of the world that have still not had women president, even though we've had lots of others that have already had, but it would have sent that message. It would have sent that message that it is possible to have a woman leader. It would have sent that message that women can ascend to the highest office. And then it would have also sent a message of acceptance by the populations of those countries in which women are trying to go into political leadership. So the thing of having Kamala Harris sends the same message that would have been sent had Hillary Clinton become become president. So this is a really brilliant idea, because even though some countries that have had women presidents, those women have only been there perhaps for one term, or they've only had that one woman. So they haven't had another woman except for Sri Lanka. For Sri Lanka, which had the first ever female president and prime minister, afterwards her daughter also became president of that country. But in other countries, although we've had a woman, it's been one woman. And once that woman has finished her term, a woman, another woman hasn't come on. So perhaps with this having the USA jump now onto the bandwagon of having women at the highest political office, then the rest of the world will think, oh, this is acceptable. Oh, right. So this can be done. So women can lead, and then we can have perhaps those countries that have already had women presidents have and vote in other women presidents. My country, Zambia, has had a woman vice president since the year 2011. And there are several other countries that have got women vice presidents. That it hasn't had the same impact on the world as Kamala Harris is taking up office will have on the world.
Okay, I see that.
That's the difference, yes.
Okay, so now I want to talk about, like, there. You talked about the power of vision. What do you mean by the power of vision? Because that's something you talked about in your book. How can people... how can women access or look into themselves and see, you know, is the vision really powerful? Now, I know the vision is powerful. I mean, we've been told that to write our vision down. We've been told that vision is very important to be able to see the big picture. And tell us the power of vision.
Vision is the most powerful motive that makes somebody work at what it is that they are working for. Without vision, first of all, you can't even start anything. Everything starts with a dream, with visualizing, with imagination, with thinking, oh, I want to do this in the world. This, if I did this in the world, this is how it would move, and this is the direction that it would take. And once you embark on that vision, nothing is going to stop you. So that is a very important aspect of anybody who wants to become a leader. They have to have a vision of what it is they want to lead, what it is they want to do. And it all starts with imagination, And think, remember in the beginning, as they say in the Bible, in the beginning there was a word, and right. then the word became, yeah. So it's still the same concept. It's mm-hmm. about, first of all, it starts at a thought.
Mm-hmm.
You think what needs to be, you look around and see where the gaps are in the world, in what can be done to empower humanity, or what contribution you can make to a certain line in the life of humanity, or in the world, or in your sphere of work, or wherever it is that you are. So you have to have this vision. Otherwise, then you are blind. You are just walking with no direction. Uh-huh. Because vision gives you a direction, which way you want things to go. And like I said, look at the vision, for example, that Maya Angelou had, in the way that she did what she did, and to lead women to believe in themselves, and all the numerous remarkable stuff that she did. That had to take vision. Without vision, you cannot do anything at all. Then you are blinded and you can't even take the first step.
That's very, very true. And so one of the things that I was reading in there, we were talking about leveraging opportunities. How can we leverage our opportunities worldwide? How can we do that? I feel that there's not enough, there's not enough communication and education when it comes to women in the U.S. and women overseas. I think there's so much that we can gain by being able to work with each other. So how do we leverage those kind of opportunities as a leader, especially as a business leader in America?
You know, there was a time when somebody did a joke about this meeting at the United Nations where they talked about, I can't remember what it was, but in the end, it said something quite, that shocked me in a way, but it said that, for example, the United States didn't know where the rest of the world was.
Right. Right.
So we live in a globalized world. We have the World Wide Web. In this global community, one, for example, I'm in London and you are in the Phoenix, and we are speaking now.
Right.
So we have all these possibilities. We have all these channels of tapping into the global networks of whether it's women in business or women in politics, without even leaving our homes. In London, we are in lockdown. We are in lockdown. Normally, I'll do this kind of interview. I may have had to fly over to Phoenix to do this, or you may have had to fly over into London to do this.
Right.
But I'm doing this in my home,
right.
from the comfort of my home. So we can reach the world. It's very easy with the World Wide Web, with the internet. So. And also, I suppose America needs to reach out more to the rest of the world and to learn from the rest of the world. I know that America is a leader, but also even as a leader, to be a good leader, you need to learn from the people whom you are leading. So this idea that saying, I just can't remember what it was, but in the end, it was concluded that Americans didn't know where the rest of the world is. Because already a very big country, 54 states brought together, which, for example, in Africa, we have 54 countries.
Right.
As separate, little separate countries. For you, it's right. one whole big country, but almost the same size or same number of nations or states, so to speak. But it is easy now with globalization. You can reach out anywhere you want to reach out in the world. All you need
Very
is just
true.
The internet. Yes.
Well, I love what you're doing when it comes to being able to include girls, because one of the things that that I've learned as being a business leader in my business, which is pretty much all of it is online, as I've become aware of just how little, like you said, Americans know about other countries. And right. I just had a great conversation. I'm in a group of young ladies that are thinking of moving to other countries. And so it was really an interesting conversation we had about the questions they ask when they want to go to other countries. And it was just interesting. I said, we kind of have a we have an idea that in America that we're entitled. I said, but we don't learn about the culture and the religions of other countries when we go. I said, so then we're very confused about how things work. And I said, and really, that is something that we really should know. We really should know. Those are probably the most important aspects of going to a country rather than just going to a country because it's beautiful, you know, or because they have great food. You know, what is the culture like? What is the religion there? You know, so I find what you're saying is very true. I still find many people like that. And one of the things that we try to advocate is to get young women to travel and go work and volunteer in other countries so they can really learn more about that country and what they're doing. So that's really very true. So also in your book, I read that how we can be an advocate, not just for others, but advocate for ourselves. How do we go into somewhere, someplace, and not just be an advocate for others, but also be an advocate for what we do in our leadership or in our business?
Yeah, it's been said that women, for example, in interview sessions, it's been reported that when men are asked about something or even offered a job that they've never done before, they will just say, yes, I will be able to do that. And also in the interview or CV, men articulate everything that they have ever done, but women are kind of economical with how they present themselves. Uh-huh. And also when we, for example, women are asked if they can do a certain task and they start to think about it and think, oh, actually, I've never done that before. Or, you know, Richard Branson did say, when you are offered an opportunity, take it and then go and learn how to do what it is they ask you to do. Okay. And that's what most men do. But with women, we are always then hesitating and thinking. And also women suffer a lot from what is called impostor syndrome.
Right.
I cannot be this person that it is. So when you're talking about advocating for others and advocating for yourself, uh-huh. you go away with that impostor syndrome. Believe in wherever it is that you care for other people, but make sure that the world knows about that.
Right.
That
right.
way you'll be advocating for yourself. Yeah.
Okay. So one of the things that was interesting is your chapter on the millennials, and which is really interesting because we have so many different things when it comes to the millennials, but they are a really interesting group. You said in there that one of the things is that a millennials know how to collaborate, and they don't come in with that, I'm just going to do it like this, you know, I'm going to lead like this. So tell me why you felt that when it comes to working with millennials.
I do work with a lot of with my foundation and also with Positive Runway. I work with a lot of young people, and many of them are millennials now. And I've also seen how other millennials are working. For example, in political office, if you just look at the way Jacinta Ardern of New Zealand has handled her presidency, it's totally different from others. The way she dealt with the terrorist act on the Muslim people, and the way she, instead of using that to separate or divide the community as has happened in other parts of the world, she used the opportunity, that occasion, sad as it was, but to bring all the New Zealanders together as one people. She made sure that the Muslims felt comfortable, that she consoled them. She even learned to say hello in their language. Mm-hmm. So the millennials are not afraid of the next person. They are not afraid that these people are coming to take us over. The millennials understand that we are one world.
Mm-hmm.
They know that we are one world and we have to collaborate and know how to do this. So Jacinta was recently re-elected for second term in office. And what she did, what no other head of state or head of government in New Zealand has done, is that one, she appointed a diverse cabinet,
mm-hmm.
a diverse cabinet that included lots of women, She included the Maoris people, which are the indigenous people of New Zealand. Mm-hmm. She also appointed a gay prime minister. I don't know whether he could be the first gay prime minister, or I think there was one in another part of the world. I can't remember where that was. So she brought in all these people that would be considered the minorities. Mm-hmm. She brought them into the cabinet. So her cabinet is sorted. It's because she's a millennial and she's not afraid.
Uh-huh.
For her, if somebody is gay, it's right. No business of hers, as long as that person can do the job that they need to do.
Absolutely.
If she's a woman, as long as she has a woman minister of foreign affairs, as long as that woman can do the job. And I think that's what millennials are looking at. They are looking at the competencies that millennial leaders, what competences somebody can bring to the table. Anything else behind in the background of that person is of no consequence.
Mm.
And also, like I said, they collaborate because they are not afraid of the next person. They believe that we are one people. And they ask the necessary questions. They question everything and go into everything to understand how this thing happened and what can be done about this thing and what is the best way that we can deal with it. In a totally different way than perhaps other generations have been doing or handling their leadership journeys.
Okay, so what do women need? I believe women need more examples of inspiration. But what do we need? What would you say that women need to do when it comes to change in each other? I always try to find women that are willing to be mentors. Do you think that's something that's still appropriate? If you're trying to be a leader or you want to aspire to be a leader, what are the ways that we do that?
Of course, yes. The organizations do mentor a lot of young people. And like I say, the young generation, they need that reassurance, they need that understanding, and they need to see this in action, to see other women leaders in action. That is what needs to be imparted on them. They need to learn and see that it is possible for them to become leaders. And this is what older women that are leaders need to impart on the young people, to give them that confidence, to boost their confidence, to inspire them, and also motivate them to take up these leadership roles. That is all that is required, really.
So, oh my goodness.
Bless you.
Okay, so one of the other questions I have for you is focus. Focus.
Oh, yeah.
The power of focus. And I will say I learned this year when we were doing our reorganization in our company, how important focus was. What do you think is the most important thing about focus?
For me, I think when I set my goals, I'm totally focusing on achieving that goal.
Mm-hmm.
You have to give it your 110% focusing on that goal. Mm-hmm. I never look at any obstacles. Once I set out to do something, I've got to get it done. All I need to know is to put things together in motion. How do I get there? What do I need to get there? And how do I get there? Anything else that's happening on the sidelines has got no consequence to what I need to do. So I am focused on achieving the goal that I have set to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the most important thing with focus. You don't go around, if you're focused, it even says in, I think it says something, there's a verse in the Bible about focus.
Right.
Don't look on the side. If you look on the side, you're going to drop into,
That's true.
So that is what it is about focus.
How long did it take you to write this book?
I've been writing this book for about 3 years now, but really I've been doing bits and pieces. And when we had the the lockdown, then I just sat down and said, let me finish this book and get it over and done with, because I had so much time on my hands.
Also, who do you think is probably a up and coming country now when it comes to women in leadership?
I don't know about up and upcoming country in women in leadership. Right. But as far as I know, I think that Jacinda Ardern scores very high in the way that she leads, and perhaps being, I don't know whether to call it the most effective woman political leader in political leadership. And of course, Finland have the youngest prime minister, and she leads a coalition government, all of which the leaders of those coalition parties are under the age of, they are in their 30s. Okay. Most of them, I think four of them are about 34 years old, and then one of them might be slightly over 35.
Okay.
So Finland is a great example. New Zealand is just a brilliant and shining example. And also before Finland got the Sanna Marin as the youngest leader, political leader in the world,
mm-hmm.
New Zealand was the youngest, because I think Jacinta got into office when she was about 37 or somewhere there, I can't tell. And the other thing is that she got into office while she was pregnant. So it's very inspirational. That's why I put New Zealand. She was pregnant and she had her baby, and she had to go to the United Nations General Assembly with her baby, and was breastfeeding the baby in the General Assembly. She was still able to present. You see, sometimes the excuses that are made for women not climbing the corporate ladder or even the political ladder, mm-hmm. is that when they start having children, then they have to take time off and cannot concentrate on their work. Mm-hmm. But in the case of Jacinta Ardern, it did not deter her. Being a mother, being pregnant, voted into office while she was pregnant,
mm-hmm.
having a young baby and having to attend the United Nations General Assembly with a small baby and breastfeeding the baby, it did not. So having a child, it did not sidetrack her or derail her from her leadership responsibilities. And I think that is a remarkable example.
Okay.
But we have several other countries, but the one that is coming up next, I have no idea.
All right. Looking at our administration with Biden, I'm really excited, because it's more of a look of what America really looks like. So I'm really excited to see where that takes us. So what's your next project on your list?
I've got loads of stuff. I just, in October 2020, I launched and started what is going to be an annual event. It's called the World Summit on Women and Girls. And this is an intergenerational.
That sounds wonderful, Justina. We look forward to hearing more about your summit this coming year, and we hope we can be part of it by sharing it here nationally and getting some of our young leaders a connection. Again, we'd like to thank Dr. Justina Mutale, and you can purchase her book, The Art of Iconic Leadership, Power Secrets of Female World Leaders, at Amazon. Proceeds from the book go to the scholarship fund at the Justina Mutale Foundation to help disadvantaged young women and girls from Africa access tertiary education across the globe. We also like to thank our audience for your support. Thank you, Team Vertical, for pulling out all stops in programming today. And we've had great issues of connection to work with, but I just really like to, I just appreciate all of you. We also like to thank our sponsor, OneSure Sign Mobile Notary, located in Frisco, Texas. And remember, the discount if you say you heard it on Living Vertical Radio. Again, thank you. This has been host Cestine Duckworth and Living Vertical Radio.